Can we just listen to the whole song? We don't play music on this station anymore. Man, I love that song. That's the first. That is the song where Tim Bremmel became aware of the Manhattan Transfer, and then found out that that's not actually the. It was, that had a more poppy feel. It crossed over into the pop charts. That's where I picked it up, obviously. But you guys have been making fantastic music for decades, and it is such an honor for us to have all four members of the Manhattan Transfer with us on the phone. Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Terrific to have you here. What a fabulous history, and as I said before we joined you, you're going back on tour. You got a new album. But you guys must love making music even more than most other popular groups that are out there, because this is not a reunion where you broke up somewhere down in the past and are now getting back together. This is you guys still just hammering out the tunes.
Yeah, we've never stopped, actually. I never stopped.
Never.
Ever.
Never.
So, we are like the ever-ready battery, the bunny. We keep on going.
So tell us, let's go way back. What happened to cause the Manhattan Transfer to form?
What caused it?
Well, yeah, like, did you all know each other as kids? What brought the group together initially?
It's not like that. It happened in Manhattan, and just to be brief with it, it's a story that sounds like it's made up, but it's not. It sounds like somebody wrote a script for a Netflix series. It had to do with Tim Hauser, our founder, who passed away about 3 years ago, driving a cab in Manhattan. And basically, Laurel Massé, our original female partner, met him through the cab. I met him through the cab. And through that, Laurel, Tim, and myself being together, we met Alan, because Alan, we were looking for a fourth guy to have two men and two women. And Alan was in the original Broadway cast of Grease.
Oh, okay.
And a mutual friend was playing drums in the pit and thought Alan would be great for us. So, and that was in 1972.
And it's been history ever since.
Yeah, it's been a wild, wild ride.
So what was the intention when you got to, was it always going to be a jazz-based focus, or were you still kind of finding your way early on, or how did that all come to be?
I don't know if it was necessarily jazz. It was actually probably more swing-oriented,
okay,
because our sound was kind of based on groups like the Pied Pipers, the Merry Macs. You know, some of the vocal groups that were with the big bands, but absolutely also we had the influence of like Lambert Hendrickson Ross, King Pleasure, you know, that stuff. But I think sound wise, the four part harmony was more of the like a big band sound. But we wanted to make contemporary records and somehow apply that four-part harmony to make pop records.
Well, it obviously worked.
Yeah, it took a while. It took a while. I mean, when we were, you know, trying to get a record deal, I mean, nobody would sign us. I mean, it took us from the time we started about 3 years to get a deal. I mean, and we had all the companies that would come down, you know, a lot of A&R guys, a lot of middle management guys, but, you know, they just wouldn't take the risk. You know, we were too weird. We weren't commercial enough.
Well, I think the main comment was, we really love you guys. You are amazing performers, but we don't think you can sell records. You know, we
least,
like you.
At least not millions of records.
But,
yeah. That was one of the requirements back
until
then.
Until Ahmet Erdogan.
Yeah, that was one of the requirements back then. You had to sell a lot of records for a record company to pick you up. So it must be sort of different and maybe kind of refreshing for you to see how the music industry has changed over the last two decades here. That pretty much, if you're talented and creative, you can kind of find your own way to be popular without a quote unquote record deal anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I think
it is. It's such an interesting time because kind of pop, you know, it gets just your version of popular. you can be an act that travels throughout this country selling out, you know, 1,000-seat theaters, and in a, some ways nobody's heard of you. You have had no hits. Yeah. You have mm-hmm. no, you know, you can, and you can still have a career of just the fans that are fans of you. I think that's the main difference. Without the labels, there's not the same kind of filter. There's not just 3 to 5 sources of the music. In some ways, that's good, and in some ways, that's bad. Filtering out some things, so in a way, the labels did kind of provide a little level that they felt you needed to be at. Now, in that old method, you know, any old group couldn't just put their thing out there. Either you needed the label, whereas you don't now. So I don't know. There's some positives and negatives, I think, to it all. It's just different in general.
Yeah. I was in the car with my daughter about a week ago, and she played all this amazing music, these great artists. And I go, how can I hear them? She goes, well, they're not on the radio. And I went, oh.
Yeah.
So the kids, they have a different source for listening to music. And they're just magnificent, you know, artists, just wonderful music, great singers, and I've never heard of a single one of them.
Yeah, it's driving us programming
but
people
like
crazy. But
yeah, yeah.
Because now all of a sudden we got it. You know, it used to be that, you know, in this business in music, you would get hit with, you know, a half a dozen record companies who are hitting you with maybe a half a dozen tunes a piece every week saying, hey, you should spin these. And it was now you basically have to go out there and choose from literally hundreds, if not thousands, of artists if you want to try and remain contemporary and relevant to young people listening to music. Very, very different world today, for sure. So would the Manhattan Transfer have been successful faster in this environment than the environment you had to start out in?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so.
I don't know if we would have succeeded. I don't know if the group would have been able to do what we did in this environment. It would have been different.
I mean, we had many transformations, and there's no time for that with artists anymore. They just got to be out there, and they got to have a hit, and they got to do it right now. You know, where this group has years of just aging and ripening and, you know, and everything we went through, like a fine cheese.
Well, that's true, and that is another difference, is a lot of today's artists are more flash in the pan. They're popular for a year, and all of a sudden they're nowhere to be found.
Yeah, we had the luxury of honing our craft. Performing live was our thing. That was really how we got our base. And we were allowed to do that also at Atlantic Records because I think we pleased Ahmet Erkin's personal tastes, let's say. So it didn't, and Atlantic Records was big enough so that other big selling groups could sort of finance more arty projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and plus I think that goes to the way that the concept of the album, the way the album is utilized and has changed, the way that releases are, you know, in terms of what used to be, oh, there's these number of singles, so some would be just before the album, and then some would come out after the album, and you'd have, there was just a different release. Now an album comes out, and within a month, you're just kind of over that album, where an album used to last a while. There was this slow trickle and a slow build of an album, and that kind of concept just doesn't happen the same way these days.
You're absolutely
Although, I'm actually, you know, the new album, The Junction, you know, is released on BMG, and I'm actually enjoying that they are distributing and doing it kind of old school.
I was going to ask you, okay. Because your take on that's right. You know, and you can go back through as many years of history as people want to go back with music. Yeah, when new albums would come out, you can go look across. Just go back and look at the Billboard Top 40 charts a lot of times, and you can find 2 singles, album comes out, 3 more singles, and it lasts almost the whole year sometimes.
Yeah.
So in the case of BMG releasing The Junction, which we obviously are here to talk about, actually, rather than reminisce, new album for you guys, kind of going back to your roots to a certain degree. Tell us a little bit about some of the music on it and how it's, I guess it's evolving. It was actually released first of April, end of March, right?
Yeah. That's right, mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it kind of pays homage to our career in a way. You know, with our producer Mervyn Warren, you know, wanted to have an album that was kind of eclectic. You know, the early albums were like that in many ways, you know, before we started doing thematic albums like Vocalese or like Brazil, they were more eclectic. And so the song choices were kind of like, okay, well, why don't we do maybe something that kind of represents this kind of a thing that we once did, you know? And we wrote a lot of the music. We wrote about half of the album. So it really was a wonderful creative process, this album.
There's jazz, there's swing, there's a hip-hop vocalese, there's a beautiful ballad, there's, you know, kind of a exotic song. Yeah, so there's a little something for everyone, and it's all a piece of the bigger puzzle, which is us, you know. So it kind of wrote itself in a sense where it's like there, I think there was another power involved that kind of said, okay, here's the record. Because you go through many, many, many songs and write things and dispose of them and start over. But it all, from my point of view, it all came together pretty incredibly, pretty magically, really.
So this is kind of it's like the best of the Manhattan Transfer, but with all new music.
Yep.
Yes. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Mm.
sounds like something people got to add to their collection. You're also, am I told correctly that you're also going back out on the road?
We've never left the road.
Okay, but I mean for this album.
I always have a suitcase by the front door.
True.
Are you coming anywhere near Wisconsin in the next little while?
I wish we would come to Madison. I mean, what a great music city. My ex-husband was just there last weekend for Ben Sidran's big reunion with Tracy Nelson and Boss Gags and, you know, amazing history of music in Madison.
We will get back there soon.
I'm thinking the Manhattan Transfer at Alpine Valley.
Hey, that would be cool.
That's an outdoor music theater.
Two words.
That would be fabulous.
Cheese curds.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly. All right, so we can find the album now, The Junction, pretty much anywhere you look. It's online.
That's right.
It's in record stores, all those kind of, well, there isn't such a thing as a record store anymore. It's on CD. You can buy it the traditional
everywhere.
Way, I'm assuming.
On all the usual formats. Platform.
Terrific. Well, it has been great to catch up with you, and so great to know that you're still churning out what I'm sure is going to be another list of hits from this album after decades out there. And it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for being here, and much success as you continue.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you very much.
All right. See ya.
Take care. Good to talk to you. The Manhattan Transfer, ladies and gentlemen, on your talk show on WCLO. Boop, bop, boop, bop.